Welcome to the Android Police Podcast. My name is Daniel Bader. This week on the show, Google releases a new Pixel feature drop, except for 380 odd million people. We'll talk about why. What's the population of the U.S. these days? I don't even know.
It sounds right.
It sounds right. We're just going to go with that. There's a new Android 14 QPR beta, but you probably shouldn't install it. And iOS 17.4 is available, which means that you now have the ugliest browser select screen in all of human history. I don't even know what to say about this travesty. It is just terrible. Apple wants it to be as ugly as possible, so people just be real mad about it. Yeah. But this is something we need to talk about. Fortnite got banned and then unbanned, or Epic got banned and then unbanned in the matter of days. And there's a bunch of grab bag stuff, including the end of Yuzu and other Nintendo emulators. The Nintendo just swiftly brought everybody to heel, which is, not hilarious. It's sad, but it's also hilarious that the company of Mario is also just the most based litigator in all of the world at the moment. So we'll talk about that a little bit. And there's a couple of other small things as well. Will, how was Mobile World Congress? How was Barcelona?
Both were great.
What was it
like? It was great seeing Manuel and James again. It was great meeting Dom and learning about how Dom is a foodie and has really good restaurant picks. That was awesome. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel lucky every time I get to go to Barcelona.
Did you eat well?
I ate great. I ate better than last year. I felt like the tapas I had at, like, even events like Motorola's event or whatever, like, were better than last year. And then, yeah, just I feel like every dinner. I also gained I gained 5 pounds there. So like I ate.
It's okay. Well, I just came back from Mexico where I am certain that I gained 5 pounds.
Yeah,
but it's worth it. It's worth it.
Yeah, you missed like actually good weather while you were gone.
I know.
I feel like it's a obviously you had, I'm sure, better weather, but it is frustrating when you leave and like February or March for vacation and then you're looking at home. I kind of had the same thing in Barcelona because it was like high 60s and sunny every day, and I was like, it's the same at home though. Like I can't even hold this over anyone's head.
It's just wild to me, like, we're not really having a winter.
No,
but I can't complain. Also, saying that, now April will be the coldest April
it's gonna snow
in recorded history, so
we're both gonna get hit with blizzards in April is what we're gonna get.
Okay, I'm hoping the only blizzard we get is a DQ blizzard in April because it's so hot. All right, there's a new feature drop. Pixel feature drop introduces even more fragmentation across the line. This is the most hilarious table in the world. Also because as the Pixel 8 gets older and older and we get to that 7-year mark and Google introduces more Pixel phones that have exclusive features and they're also supporting those phones for 7 years, this table is just going to be incomprehensible. But let's go over what this feature drop brings and why it's being delayed in the US until March 11th.
So as far as what it's bringing to like Pixel 8 users, like the answer is not that much. This is really a feature drop primarily focused on like delivering new features to older phones, right? So for example, Circle to Search is coming to the Pixel 7 and the Pixel 7 Pro. It's not a phone thing, but the first gen Pixel Watch is getting a bunch of stuff from the Pixel Watch 2, including auto workout mode, pace training, stuff like that, right? So the Pixel Watch 1 will essentially act a little bit more like a Pixel Watch 2. There's some call screening improvements, which is very cool. You can basically like jump in to say hello if someone's silent or anything like that, right? Like, it's a few more chips for responses to people when they're on the phone. And then app screen sharing and fast pair improvements. So for example, on the fast pair side, those devices will stay like locked to your device when you move to a new one. So if you upgrade your phone, it's like one less step. And FastPair was already pretty quick where like you won't even have to like repair. They'll just already be like linked to your account. So it's a lot of like really small things and more specifically like stuff made for people who have like a Pixel 7 Pro as opposed to like a Pixel 8 Pro. But it's nice to see as far as like why it's launching Monday instead of this week in the US. I actually don't know if we know. Like, it's just one of those weird Google things where there's some weird hiccup and it launched globally, but not in the US. And I feel like I've just gotten used to the fact that like every single Google update will have some kind of weird asterisk attached to it where, oh, it was out, it got pulled, or like we delayed it 2 weeks from now or something like that. I don't know. It's very weird how Google manages their devices. But really, I think the table that is in our coverage showing which Pixel has which software feature coming to it in this feature drop is like the story of this thing, because it's deeply silly. For example, that like one of the features I didn't mention is like 10-bit HDR video, ultra HDR photos on Instagram. Like that actually makes sense that it's only coming to like the Pixel 8 and the Pixel 7 series, although not the 7a, but like the improvements to call screen not coming to the Pixel 6a, on the Pixel 6, on the Pixel 6 Pro, not the Pixel 6a that is also running a Tensor G1 chip. Like it's right there. The silliest one is, and Manuel wrote about this week, but Circle the Search, as I mentioned, coming to the Pixel 7, Pixel 7 Pro, not coming to the Pixel 7a or the Pixel Fold yet? Question mark. Like just not there. I suppose it's possible that this has something to do with the Pixel Fold being a foldable, and maybe the UI of that is not, and I can give a shout out to this later in the show, but I was on Android Faithful this week and we were talking about how it's possible that it has something to do with the dock, how you swipe up for the dock and how Circle the Search is attached to either the home button or the gesture nav bar. The Pixel 7a, I have no idea why they wouldn't put this on the 7a. I actually don't really know why Circle to Search isn't just on like most Android phones at this point beyond some weird partnership with Samsung. So I don't know, like I find this kind of frustrating in a way that, like, you know, as I briefly said to you in the pre-show, Daniel, like we're supposed to take Google seriously on their OS upgrade policy for the 8 series moving forward, right? 7 years of OS upgrades. But like these tables showing features that are and aren't coming to devices that are just a generation or two old. Like, what is this going to look like, as you said, in 2029? Yeah, your Pixel 8 Pro will technically be running the most recent version of Android, but it won't have any of the features you actually want unless you buy a new phone.
It's weird, not unusual. Although, to be honest, this is also, I think Samsung has a really good track record of very systematically bringing software features over to old phones over the course of a couple of years. And
yeah,
you can take for granted that like within 2 years, the A series will get the features from that year's S series. But even the iPhone doesn't have a great track record of like putting every feature on an old device.
I brought this up on Android Faithful because I think it's a good comparison point, because I think it's kind of what Google is chasing, right? Is the iOS promise of like, this is on most of our phones from the last like 6-7 years. And if you go to whatever iOS version is most recent, right? So right now it's iOS 17. If you go to Apple's iOS 17 page where they lay out all the features, scroll all the way to the bottom, you will find currently it's 14 footnotes, right? And a couple of these are like available in English, parentheses, Canada, US, right? For specific features. Most of them are available on iPhone 12 and later, available on iPhone XS and XR or later, and so on and so forth, right? So it is specific features only limited to like, oh, if you have an iPhone 11, you can't use this. You need an iPhone 12 or an iPhone 12 Pro. Those are significantly older phones than like the Pixel 7a, which is not even a year old and still doesn't have Circle to Search, right? And maybe that's a bad example because that's like a budget phone, but these phones are much older, like the iPhone 13 or 12, I should say, because I think all of these are like iPhone 12 and later, is older than the Pixel 6, for example, and the Pixel 6 is missing a lot of this. So Apple's not perfect on it, but I think Google is still kind of off on the wrong foot here in already having missing features from 2023 smartphones, basically.
Yeah, I think the issue is once Apple brings, they set a line in the sand, or they draw a line in the sand and they say, as you said, these devices will get this feature, and they roll that out to every possible device at the same time, right?
In the same time is like the big thing.
Yeah, they don't go back and like slowly add those features to older devices piecemeal. And I think this is the problem with, I don't know what the limitation is, if it's a QA limitation or a UI limitation or just a popularity limitation. Right? One would argue that the 7A is likely more popular than the 7, right? Maybe not the 7 Pro.
Yeah.
Like, I'm almost certain the 7A sold in higher volumes than the Pixel 7, just given the price. Yeah, I mean, there doesn't seem to be a lot of technical reason why they don't bring it to these devices, but I don't know. Google has a weird testing structure.
They do.
It's possible that they just finished testing on the 7 series and were like, all right, we're going to roll it out now.
Yeah.
We're going to go through the older devices and then bring it to that, you know, to those over time.
Yeah.
Makes no sense to us, but I'm sure internally there's a reason. Either way, it just feels scattershot is the word that I would use, and it doesn't do much to assuage the idea that when you're talking about the experience of using a Pixel, you're not universally talking about that experience anymore. You know, if we talk about using a Pixel, we're mainly talking about the experience of using it on the flagship Pixel. And even not anymore with flagship, because the Fold is more expensive, but it doesn't have every feature that the 8 and 8 Pro do. And then we found out on an Android developer podcast this week that there's some hardware limitation that prevents the Pixel 8 from getting the Gemini Nano LLM to run natively on it, even though the only major hardware difference is that the 8 Pro has 12 gigs of RAM and the Pixel 8 has 8 gigs of RAM. But they weren't explicit on why the limitation is there. Nobody really cares about this. Everybody listening to this is going to know, but like, that we're not the typical Pixel user. It's funny. The more I kind of notice it in public, I see lots of Pixel phones.
It's so weird how many Pixel phones I see, considering that I know their market share is like tiny. I don't know how to square that in my head where I'm like, am I just not noticing the Motorola phones that people are using? Am I mistaking the Motorola phones for Pixels? I'm pretty sure I know what a Pixel camera bar looks like, and I see many more of those than like Motorola phones, but that's not what the numbers say. So I don't know. It's very weird, but I'm with you. I would almost say sometimes I notice Pixels more than recent Samsung phones. I don't know. It's very weird.
When I was in Mexico, a lot of people I saw had Motorola phones with their notifications turned on, the sound turned on.
Yeah.
So all I would hear was, hello, Moto, over and over and over again. It was very strange and like off-putting.
Yeah.
You don't hear that often. It's like hearing the water droplets from the Galaxy S3.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Just like brought back to a world where that was the most popular Android phone. It's like, what year is this? All right. So that's the Pixel feature drop for March. It's coming to your US Pixel phone by likely the time you hear this, Monday, March 11th. So stay tuned for that. I think it's great that the Pixel Watch 1 is getting a lot of features from the Pixel Watch 2, given its, you know, talk about hardware limitations. Like, that's an actual hardware limitation. The SoC in that thing is so old that I'm surprised it can do a lot of these things. They probably had to figure out how to do a lot of it in software or through, you know, different algorithms that just to compensate for the lack of hardware. But glad that it's happening. Not that there are that many Pixel Watch users out there, but who knows? Okay, Android 14 QPR 3 Beta 2. Another beta for an upcoming quarterly release. But again, like, this one seems to be extremely buggy.
It's so funny because like the changelog for this and the fluidity of my job means that I have not covered a QPR beta in a while, right? The changelog. I wrote this post this week and I was like, oh, I'm like a little rusty at this. This took me a little longer than it used to. But I've never seen a changelog like this. Like, QPR 3 beta 1 sounded unusable based on this changelog. It's fixed an issue that sometimes caused a device to crash or restart unexpectedly. Fixed an issue ... crash or restart unexpectedly while updating apps. Fixed the issue that caused the device to display a blank black screen after booting from flash. And it just like keeps going. And I'm looking at this list and I'm like, anyone running beta 1 must have been pulling their hair out. I hope no one put it on their daily driver. And so you have this rollout where like all of the fixes are literally just like to make the device usable again on this. And it's so weird because QPR betas are not usually this buggy. And then within 20 minutes of the OTA files and the factory images going live, you start to hear, and shout out to 9to5 Google because they probably took the brunt of it, but people start bricking their devices, sideloading the OTA to, you know, see what else is new in this QPR 3 beta. 9to5 Google bricked 3 pixels in a matter of like 20 or 30 minutes. Like, it's soft brick, right? So that's good. You can get it back. They figured out how to get it back up and running, and it basically, you have to flash the beta 1 OTA and you can get it up and running. But yeah, like, it's not just that this was like fixing a lot of like really bad bugs in beta 1, but it's also that if you tried to rush to it instead of waiting for the OTA file to hit your phone, you also probably bricked your phone.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the way Android has worked for 15 years now. So yeah. It used to be fun bricking your phone and then having to try to fix it. That was called a challenge. These days, you're not expecting it to happen. Whereas right. Back in the day when like a Cyanogen mod nightly bricked your phone temporarily, you were like, okay, well, you know, now it's a challenge to figure out how to fix this. Now it's like, as we talked about in a previous episode, it's like, there are people that don't know how to use, I mean, obviously the people that are sideloading a QPR beta know how to use ADB, but still, like, this is not something that you expect.
No, and yeah, I'm sure I've talked about before in the show that, like, I remember breaking a G2 at 2 a.m. and staying up until 5 a.m. to get it fixed, putting stuff like Cyanogen mod on it. But, like, that is completely different from, like, pushing in an OTA file through ADB commands, as you say, rather than waiting for the OTA. And I mean, this wasn't even like a, like, oh, I fucked up and like downloaded the wrong file. It was like, if anyone knows the proper way to sideload OTAs onto their phone, it's people at 9to5 Google, and they bricked 3 of them. You know, like, it's just not good. It was not good. And it wasn't just them. Like, the Reddit, as I was reporting on this, like, the Reddit comments started to fill up with people being like, yeah, I just bricked my phone. Maybe don't install this. So not great.
Rip. All right. Well, anybody who did brick their phone temporarily, I hope you figured out how to get it fixed. A couple things on iOS 17.4. So this was launched this week. It launched a whole bunch of DMA compliant features in Europe, including a new default browser pop-up. And it's just fascinating to me that, like, Apple is doing everything it possibly can to make this a bad experience for people in order to push back against these regulations. So there are no alternate app stores yet. That's coming in a while. Epic was banned temporarily and then unbanned in a matter of days for making, I would say, valid statements against Apple on Twitter. Tim Sweeney was like, we're going to put an alternate app store on iOS in Europe, but like, we're not going to like it. And it's Apple still being greedy and doing everything it can to make this a poor experience for both developers and users. And their developer account was banned. And then there was today as we're recording, the EU started investigating it, and then Apple just magically unbanned the account. So that's the way it goes.
The European Commission even took credit for it on Twitter. The commissioner was like, yep, we're satisfied with this. Like, it certainly had something to do with the fact that we were rushing an investigation into it. I mean, John Gruber at Daring Fireball made this point yesterday, I think, as we record this, that like Apple like almost certainly could have killed the Epic Games developer account without spawning this investigation by like just pointing to the stuff Epic did 4 years ago now as a violation of Apple's rules. And instead, Apple pointed to their public statements and said that, like, oh, this is purely just because we don't like what Epic and Tim Sweeney are saying publicly. And of course it was going to end with the EU being like, we don't care about that. You need to let them back on the platform. Like, it was always a dumb move. This is another round of bad press, I should say, over what Apple's doing with the App Store and what they're allowing on their platform that they just didn't even need to do. Like, they didn't even need to have this. They could have just like let Epic do what it wanted and maybe not looked like the good guy, but definitely not looked like the bad guy. And I don't know, just a dumb decision over at Apple. I have no idea why they thought that this would be successful.
So just to be perfectly transparent here, Google also had to make some changes to comply with the DMA. A lot of them were already in place in Europe, so there weren't any drastic ones, but there are more choice screens now than there were before around default browser, default search, payment platforms, etc. And then developers now have the ability to not use Google Play Billing, but they are going to get additional fees if they choose to go that route. And they're not really saving much money. So it feels not quite as punitive as Apple's version, but certainly not this like open market that both companies have made it seem. There's an initial acquisition fee of 5% and then an ongoing services fee of 7% that you have to pay for if you're selling a subscription. There's a 17% ongoing services fee for some subscriptions and then a 7% fee for other types of subscriptions. Google is also saying like you can opt out of some of this if you continue to use Google's like protection, Google Play Protect and things like that. It's a bit of a mess, but it's not forcing developers to pay 50 cents per install like Apple is. So there's more transparency here, but it's not like straightforward. It's not like developers can just be like, okay, we're going to use our own billing provider, not pay Google anything, and we'll pass the savings down to the users. Like, that's not happening, which is not surprising because that's not what Google was doing in the Netherlands around gambling apps or in Korea around dating apps. Or I think I might be conflating the two countries. But anyway, they had to implement a bunch of these user choice billing features way before the DMA because they were sued in those countries and lost. But it was all just a precursor to this. Now the fees are here. It's going to be interesting to see how this is received on Android, just given the perception that Android is more open than iOS in general. But Google, as I talked about in the Sam Bright interview, and like the perception that developers have of Google is that towing the line between being this open platform and also trying to really keep a stranglehold on billing commissions has made Google look like a hypocrite. Whereas Apple at least is open about its greed and is now in the shit because like all of the things that it's doing are underhanded. But previously, before the DMA, it was like, if you want to be on the App Store, you pay us 15% or 30%, period. Right? That's it. You have no choice. You can go somewhere else if you don't want it. Now it's like, well, you have to pay 50 cents and blah, blah, blah. It's like, as you said, like it's a bad PR nightmare, but I think Apple will survive. It's not going to matter in a few years because there won't be any alternate app stores.
No, exactly. Yeah. Do you want to talk about this? We teased it, but this browser screen on iOS, like I just,
yes, I would love to. So when you launch Safari, the first time after...
I actually think, is it launching Safari or is it actually just... Oh, no, you're right. It is launching Safari. Sorry. I thought I read someone say that it's like presented when you reboot your phone the first time. But you're right. It is when you first open Safari.
Well, it's the first time you launch your default browser. So you could have already chosen your default browser on iOS, right? Yes. So the first time you launch your default browser, it now gives you a choice screen. And apparently the options are based on the popularity of the third-party browsers in your region.
Yeah.
So Manuel, given where he is in Germany, the browsers that he's shown, Opera, Yandex, Firefox, Ecosia, Brave, DuckDuckGo, Aloha, Onion Browser, Chrome, U.com, Edge, and Safari, I'm surprised. That doesn't sound like, that doesn't sound correct to me.
No, it doesn't.
That like Chrome would be lower on the list than like Ecosia, but who knows? Maybe it's reverse popularity.
But then I'm going to be honest, I've never heard of U.com, and for that to be third if it's reversed above Chrome, I don't know. Maybe.
I read this on Threads. Yeah. It may not be true, but apparently that is how Apple is presenting these options. But anyway, you get 12 options.
Yeah.
Some of these you've never heard of.
Right.
And it's just a list of browsers. Some of them aren't even real browsers, and you have to choose a default. And once that happens, you can ignore it forever. but it's very funny and very ugly, and nothing Apple would ever choose to do if they didn't have to.
No, I think it was The Verge's reporting that said that also, like, if you want to change your default browser, like, after you've set it, like, it, I don't think it matters what you set it to. It's still hidden under the Safari settings in iOS settings, not, like, incredible, anywhere else. So you still have to know where to go to fix it, and it's not where you would think. Yeah, I mean that's an issue with iOS settings in general, but still very funny.
Just a nightmare. Just a living nightmare. But it's here. You know, we're going to see more and more of this as third-party app stores launch on iOS. And apparently, if you leave the EU for a month,
yes,
you then lose access to these features.
Yeah, you won't be able to access your third-party app stores, and you'll be able to use the apps you've installed from there, but I don't believe you can update the apps that you've installed, which seems like a security problem to me, like for a company that prides itself on security and keeps screaming about how the DMA rules are a violation of the privacy Apple gives to its users. It sure seems like Apple putting these restrictions in place that if you're in the US for 2 months, after a month, your apps from outside the App Store will stop updating. That seems like a privacy and security problem they've created, not the EU, but what do I know?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those balancing acts where Google or Apple has to abide by the DMA only as much as the borders of the EU can actually force them to.
Yeah.
At the same time, you're right. Like, it's very un-Apple. Although, like, they're saying, if you want to download that app, you could do it on the App Store.
Exactly.
And we will update it for you all over the world.
Although that's not true, because, like, the example I think all of us would use to present this is the world where the Epic Game Store is on iOS in Europe so that you can play Fortnite. And after a month, Fortnite will stop updating and you can't go get that from the App Store. So, like, you know, I'm just saying that, like, it sure seems like this is a problem Apple created. That won't be true for every app, obviously. There will be, but
again, like, that's a problem. That's a you problem. That's not an Apple problem.
But
Apple doesn't want you to be secure in the EU, right? It wants you to get knifed in the stomach.
Okay. Let's talk about this compliance document then, because this is not new for Apple, but I'm kind of obsessed with, like, they released this 12-page report that goes into a bunch of it, not just the stuff that they've launched this week, but also stuff they're going to add over the next, like, 2 years, basically. And it starts with this, like, really just, like, high and mighty screed. And again, not new, but high and mighty screed about how, like, the DMA actually is risking users and developers, and it's just going to... Oh, the iPhone is going to be filled with malware now. And you guys don't even understand. It's going to be, if you're in the EU and you have an iPhone and you use any of this, you're probably going to have your bank account information stolen and your identity stolen, and you're going to be homeless in, like, 3 months. Like, it's true. Like, the scaremongering in these documents that Apple is being forced to push out, it's so funny to me, because it's like every other platform, including the Mac that you guys make, works this way, and no one, like, everyone's fine. Like, you can put platforms in place that prevent the malware you're so concerned about, right? But the idea that, like, this is suddenly, like, uncharted territory for Apple, like, just get over it, man. Like, I just, like, truly can't deal with, like, how much they have to, like, yell about it before they can finally get to, like, okay, with all of that out of the way, here's what we're being forced to do. Browser choice screens in the EU, here's what we're doing, and so on and so forth. I don't know. It's just so funny.
It's interesting, too, that part of this document includes emails written to Tim Cook about how there are people in the EU that are not going to allow sideloading on their iPhones because they respect Apple's commitment to security.
Yeah.
And, okay, the vast majority of people won't even know third-party app stores exist.
Exactly.
But the reality is exactly what you just said, that they've gone to Chrome or Google.com to download Chrome, and they've installed it on their Macs, and they're fine. And they've used Steam, and they've used Game Pass, and they've used any number of other apps to purchase third-party applications, or they've gone to GitHub and downloaded a freaking zip file that contains a DMG, a What's the package name on a Mac?
Is it not DMG? This shows you the last time I used a Mac.
DMG, it is. Okay, I think you're right. I was mixing it up with like an Adobe uncompressed file type.
Yeah, I gotcha.
I think Apple's just being vigilant for show, but it's also good, right? Like, it's a balance. If they weren't being punitive against developers on the financial side,
yes,
the notarizing and the commitment to keeping things as secure as possible, even while you're endeavoring to download apps on a third-party app store, that's good, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But the onus on the developers to have like $1 million in credit and then charging them 50 cents per user for the first year, it's just not in good faith.
No, not at all.
So, anyway.
I mean, I hope with whatever power they have that you like keeps putting pressure on Apple to actually give developers a chance to use the tools that they have to put in place, because like none of this is in good faith and it's frustrating. And like, it's frustrating even as someone that like, I'll never get to experience this stuff because it's going to be locked to the EU because Apple doesn't have to do it anywhere else. And they're not going to if they don't have to. And the US is, you can fucking bet, never going to put any of this stuff into, like, never going to come close to putting this sort of regulation on Apple or any other tech company, like maybe TikTok actually, but otherwise not any other tech company, certainly not Apple. And it sucks because some of the stuff in this compliance document is like a better way to switch from iPhone to Android, right? So like Google offers its own app, has for a couple of years for moving data to Android, but it's pretty limited and the user reviews on it aren't great, as you can probably imagine. Like, it can only scrape so much data versus like if Apple made their own tool to move from iPhone to Android, or as it refers to it, non-iPhone device or non-Apple device, which is so funny to me. There's only one other mobile platform. It's Android. Apple's tool will be able to move your data at an OS level in a way that like Google's tool cannot. I think that's good. It's not just the only thing that they're working on. They're also going to let you uninstall Safari by the end of 2024. And then shortly after that, you should be able to take your data from Safari and move it into Chrome, for example. So you wouldn't, even like switching your browser wouldn't result in you losing all of your like browser history and so on. Like, you can take that with you as you uninstall Safari. So I don't know. There's a lot of good stuff in here. It just sucks that they're so, like, they're dragging their feet against it and then also trying to restrict it whenever they can. It sucks.
Yeah. We have like 2 minutes. We're going to run through the rest of this in a grab bag. Pixel 8a is going to cost more money.
Yep.
Not surprising. How much it costs?
I think it's a little surprising.
I don't know. I mean, you're always...
They just raised the price to 500. Now we're going to go up to 550 probably.
We're extrapolating European pricing and turning it into US dollars.
Yes.
I don't think it would be shocking if this went up to $550, especially given what we're expecting in terms of spec upgrades, aesthetic improvements, things like that. Again, it would mean that the entry bar has been raised a little bit more, but it wouldn't shock me if Google continued to sell the Pixel 7a.
They for will. Like, I think they will.
$400.
Yes. What I will say is this. I already thought the Pixel 7a had a pretty dismal display for 2023. The OnePlus 12R, obviously Oxygen OS is not perfect, but that phone is $500 and has, in my opinion, like fantastic screen. The only issue I have with it is that it's a curved display. They're taking displays more seriously now, so I think they will. But if Google can't bring like an A+ display to the 8A at this price, then it's a non-starter. Like, if we're talking 550 in 2024, you gotta nail every aspect of this phone.
Agreed. Nintendo just like went on a complete witch hunt this week. Last week, the makers of Yuzu settled for $2.4 million and one of the least believable apology notes of all time, where it said, we never wanted to encourage people to pirate in Nintendo games. Yuzu's gone. Citra's gone. This has impacted other emulators as well, including a very popular Nintendo DS emulator. This is probably not going to end anytime soon. People are terrified of Nintendo, rightfully so, because they always win. Nintendo does not believe that emulation should be legal. Nintendo emphatically believes that emulation is just a means to piracy instead of game preservation. And their argument is if you really cared about game preservation, you would just subscribe to Nintendo Online Services because all of the good NES and SNES games are on there. Some N64 games now, Sega games as well. I think that's fair, but also that's a subscription. It may go away one day. It's not physical game, blah, 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 blah. So you can take what you will from this. To be fair to Nintendo, though, the makers of Yuzu did not just make an emulator. They really did show people how to take product keys from Switch consoles, which obviously is necessary to play the games. It's intellectual property. They leaked a version of the new Zelda game before it was actually available, which I think pissed Nintendo off to no end, rightfully so, because it actually spoiled some parts of the game before the game was even available. But yeah, not a great time for Nintendo emulation. Skyline also disappeared last year. There are other teams like taking up the mantle, but like, you know, buy a Switch if you really want to play Switch games. Like, that's the reality. And that's it. I think we're going to leave it there.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Why not?
Yeah, okay. go grab Drastic, the DS emulator, if you haven't. It's free right now. Like, they made it free. They're going to pull it from the Play Store at some point. So it is a really, really good emulator. So if you have not tried it out before because it was $5, just go grab it. That's it.
That's it. All right. Well, thank you for joining us this week, Will. Hope you have a great weekend.
You too, man. Yeah.
Thank you. And if you have any feedback for us, send us an email, podcast@androidpolice.com. We love hearing from you.
Oh,
go listen to Will.
Yes, I was just about to say.
On the Android Faithful podcast this week. That's
yes,
great.
There we
I'm
going
to listen to it this weekend.
If this felt short, this was a slightly shorter one for us. It was a bit of a quieter week, but I think that show went long. So like that show was like an hour and change. So you can double down and you can listen to me and Jason and Ron and Wen. And it's a really good conversation.
Amazing. All right, that's it. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.